I am the general manager at Angel City Football Club.
And what is Angel City?
We are professional women's soccer. I started out as vice president of soccer operations and player development. Now I oversee the entire soccer operations.
It is incredibly popular here. You have Alexis Ohanian, you have Jennifer Garner, so many people involved.
It's an opportunity that traditional investors would not have.
It is a really great case study. Hi, Angela.
Hi, Arlen.
How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm doing really well.
Nice.
I'm happy. Happy that you're here. Happy that we're wearing the uniform.
I know. Right? Arlen was here.
Yes.
Angel City.
Yes. Very cool. So, am I right in that you went across town to be here from an Angel City meeting, right? Pretty
yes.
cool. That's
yeah.
pretty cool. That's
yeah.
like your life, right?
That has been my life.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what is your role at Angel City? And then for people who are not familiar with Angel City,
yeah.
talk a little bit about that. But what's your role there?
I am the general manager at Angel City Football Club.
And yeah. what is Angel City?
We are professional women's soccer. We are here as a pro women's soccer team in Los Angeles. We are actually starting our second season in the NWSL, the National Women's Soccer League here in the United States.
Exciting. I mean, were you around when the team was being formed and the idea for the team was being formed?
Yeah, it's actually interesting because my foray into Angel City was actually as an investor. I am one of 13 former U.S. Women's National Team members who invested in Angel City. We currently have about 100 investors, but that was my entry into Angel City FC. So before the team was formed, before I actually even became a full-time employee of the club, that was my entry.
And that's because you said you and others, so you mm-hmm. were on like national winning teams, right?
Mm-hmm.
So well, let's talk a little bit about that first.
Sure.
So what team, what year, who are some of your teammates?
Yeah, I feel fortunate because I started watching and following the U.S. Women's National Team when I was probably around 12 or 13 years old. My dad brought a VHS cassette tape home. I don't know if you remember those.
I remember. I'm
yeah,
40,
we're
42.
Like, I think a couple years older. Yeah, exactly.
42.
So saw the U.S. Women's National Team, and they became role models for me because I didn't really have a whole lot of other women to look up to in the sport. I played with all boys when I first started playing. Just the game has evolved so much
yes.
from where it was. And so, you know, throughout my childhood, eventually made the U.S. Women's National Team and played in two Olympics and two World Cups. So 2004 and 2008 Olympics, and then 2003 and 2007 World Cups.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so you were, there was some outreach, you became an investor.
Mm-hmm.
Was it exciting? Like, did you think, did you kind of know that this would be popular? Because it is incredibly popular here in LA.
Yeah. There was something, even when I first got that initial email of, are you interested in investing in this club? With that ask, that I knew it was gonna be something very special.
Really?
You know, I think the excitement, the timing of when this team first launched in this space and time, and I think also for what the club represents and how it was the origin story. You know, Natalie Portman going and finding out that there's no women's professional soccer team in Los Angeles from, you know, the Time's Up event that she was at, listening to one of my former teammates, Abby Wambach, and about pay equity and the differences in professional sports and the gender differences, and how that literally equates to the bank account when retirement happens for women's professional athletes in comparison to men's. And so that's where Angel City was really born out of, this idea and concept, you know, from Natalie. You know, one thing led to the next and Angel City was born, but a very impact and mission-oriented soccer club.
Mm-hmm. And very much so, but I have to observe as an investor myself, mm-hmm. very much so on the cutting edge of the way you all are running this, at least from the outside.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Alexis Ohanian, you have Jennifer Garner, so many people involved. You were tapped as an investor, and that was, you know, the cap table itself,
yeah.
the list of investors itself is diverse.
Yeah.
Is there an idea to treat this like a tech company?
I think by nature of having Alexis Ohanian as our founding and investor and lead investor, definitely. It's the approach has been completely different than the traditional model in professional sports. You know, not just having one, two or three majority investors and having that be the sole investor group, but you know, we have 100 investors. But in doing that and leveraging, you know, their platforms and their audiences and followers, it grows the sport and the attention and the visibility of this team. And that then helps our players and their visibility as well.
I see it when I go to the games, which I my wife and I go to the games. We're so thrilled about it.
Love it.
She's from Europe, so she's, you know, used to the soccer and all that. And we go there, and every time we go there, there's a different group of you know, celebrities, people you know, but they're invested in. And hey, I've been around. I've done 200 investments in companies. So I've seen a lot of party rounds, a lot of like, oh, there's a celebrity on there, but you never hear from them. They never participate. That's not always the case. There's some great people like LeBron James, for instance, who's always interactive. But to see them at games that are not the finals and see them at games that are not just the launches and getting the crowd whipped up and, you know, talking about it in other places, that has to feel really... I mean, how does it feel?
It's incredible. I think, you know, you've experienced it, but the games themselves, the energy, the electricity in the stadium, it's palpable, you know, and I think our players thrive off that. And we actually had a player or two saying, you know, the crowd like clapping and cheering, but it's because, you know, someone's up on the jumbotron there, right? One of the celebrities. But I think it's just that feeling of support, you know, that we're all in this together and having this incredible group of investors who, I mean, they show up to the quarterly Zoom calls and, you know, they're there sharing their time and, you know, their network and resources as well. And I think it's just that community feel and that feeling of support. And I think it's felt, you know, all the way top down and bottom up as well.
Do you feel, or the players, the group feel a pressure? Because there is a celebrity aspect to it. Is there any kind of, I don't know, you know, jealousy within the league, or and they're saying things and then you feel a pressure to be number one first year out?
I think, I mean, I'm still competitive, you know, as an athlete, but, and I think our athletes are obviously very competitive as well. The pressure that I think they feel the most is the visibility and that pressure to perform on the field because of the support, not necessarily because it's just the investors, but I mean, the incredible community, the fans that show up game after game. It wasn't just like this one big event one time, but the entire season. So I think that's the pressure. It's unlike any other experience, you know, that game experience in the entire league. So
what kind of numbers? Because I've seen some San Diego numbers which were jarring. What kind of numbers are you all seeing?
22,000.
22,000. Because you're at the, what is it, Bank?
BMO now, BMO Stadium. Yeah, Bank of California formerly.
And 22,000, so let's say it's game five home. You're going to see 20,000 people there?
It will feel like that if it's not completely sold out to capacity, but.
It's just full, and everybody, there's this light spirit to it. Like, you'll see there's a lot of kids. A lot of kids, but you also see, you know what I thought was really touching was like, there's just this group of, frankly, gay women who feel very much at home, very, you know, like they have something to fight for. And then you see like dads with their daughters or with their sons. You'll see like grown men with things written on them and they're I mean, it's hardcore. Is hardcore. And it's very exciting, and it's justified. Because then the players get out there and they're giving us a show. And I personally don't understand, you can tell me as a player, how do y'all run so much in one game?
When I retired, it took me like 2 years before I could start working out again. It's a lot. You train, you practice, but I think to your point though, very intentionally built this club and this organization and that experience that you get when you go to the Angel City Games, inclusive of all, and a feeling of safety and security that maybe you don't get in other places, especially at sporting events.
And I want to make be very true to the audience here, because this is your first million. I want to talk about just anything they can take away. It is a really great case study if you're interested. And is there anything that you can compare? Like, can you say, you know, you were saying before, like, usually it's like two or three of these, frankly, mostly white men who are older, who are rich for another reason, and they say, I want to own a game, and then they do, or own a team, and then they do. But this is much more diplomatic, somewhere
with that.
All of that. Is there any plan in the future? Do you all think about, like, how this can grow? I mean, it's already, you all already, I think, I'm just saying what's public, I haven't had any conversation, but I think you already, like, you're bringing in sponsors at like a record pace, all of this stuff is happening. How do you look to the future financially?
Yeah, I think it stems from us as a club and part of our values and being able to think differently and do things differently, staying on that cutting edge. You know, I think also by virtue of how we've been able to bring in investors as well. You know, I'm not one of those white men. You know, I'm here on this as a very manifesting, you know, my first million coming up. To get that. But you know, I think it's a different opportunity. It's an opportunity that, you know, traditional people and investors would not have.
Yeah.
They represent.
Even if you're not a direct investor in it, you kind of see yourself.
Yes.
In that group.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, then that just opens up a whole new line of thinking, and you know, that representation, that visibility, I think, you know, starts to have a ripple effect, which is pretty cool. And you know, allowing other athletes to say, "Hey, I want to invest in a women's professional sports team as well." So I think that just opens so many more doors.
I've already heard it, by the way. I've heard people reach out to me a lot because I put out there that I want to invest in a WNBA game, team. Again, I keep saying game, team. But people have been reaching out to me for all kinds of different sports. And I think Angel City has a lot to do with it. Yeah. I think people now know it's, okay, you broke ground and there's a way to do that. Yeah. And there must be something, you know, the business model of it is quite interesting.
Yeah.
It's already being proven out, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
And for you, so you didn't start out as a general manager.
Correct.
Right. So tell me a little bit about that journey, how you went from investor to then what was your role?
Yeah, so when I first started out after becoming investor, I think having conversations and just seeing how impactful Angel City was being in the community, that was kind of like my hook that brought me in. And I started out as vice president of soccer operations and player development. So that was more of all the operations of the movements of the team and the players and the staff, the facilities, logistics, to the player development off the field. So I think, you know, a lot of times that term and that title is used for on-field player development, but really having a more holistic approach and how we are able to develop our players, not just on the field, but off the field. What type of resources, education that they can start to have like while they are professional players, so that, you know, once they reach that time of the next chapter and they're finished playing, they're set up for more success.
Because they're so young.
Yeah.
They're so young, and there's only a certain number of years you're going to play this incredible game.
Yep.
And if you think, worry about it later.
Yeah.
Later comes really fast.
It does. It sneaks up on you.
Yeah.
It sneaks up on you.
A little bit of a different topic, but I've always kind of wondered this, because you're talking about player development, and I shouldn't cut you off, but you went from player development to this role, or did you have something in between?
Yeah, so basically went to this role, and it was kind of like a mid-season change, really.
Yeah.
We did a reorganization of our structure of the soccer side of the house, and that was essentially a promotion to general manager, where I then, now I oversee the entire soccer operations and
the
coaching and medical performance and all of it. So,
did you do a little dance when you heard?
Definitely not.
No, you didn't?
Definitely
You're just playing it cool?
No.
You're just like, is it because you don't have imposter syndrome and you just think that's, I'm qualified for this?
Oh, no, I definitely have imposter syndrome.
Oh, so why do you think you didn't celebrate?
I think it was just, there was so much going on at the time. And you know, we started out with a different structure. And so we were able to make changes that were going to be beneficial for our club and organization midway through. So it was more of, okay, just making these adjustments and these changes in the moment. Okay, this is, you know, this is where we are now. You know, let's, we're always constantly looking to improve and to elevate and to do things better.
So do you think it will, you know, eventually come a time where you can kind of sit back and say, oh my gosh, here I am? Or do you think it's just like, it's running, you're running?
I mean, I think, and obviously you're an entrepreneur, so you get this. This is a startup, so I feel like our pace and our speed has not slowed down. And I mean, the momentum just seems to keep building, even though I don't know how that's possible.
How is it
gets
possible?
Faster. So, and I'm very much, you know, like I'm in it. I'm head down. Yeah. I'm focused. Like, let's get to the next thing.
That seems like a really great quality to have in someone doing this job. Because if you were too celebratory, it might be like, oh, you're not gonna be able to do this.
Yeah.
But I was gonna ask, how does it feel? Maybe as a player, if you know this experience, or as you've seen people, because it happened recently, how does it feel to be traded when you're thinking about player development?
Yeah.
Is it, do people understand it? It's just part of the game? It's like the movie Moneyball, you know? Is it just?
I know, right? That movie.
do you think that was a good representation of it?
It cracks me up because our president always like, oh, this is so fun. This is exciting. Like, I'm this person, you're this person.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I can't watch this. This is too real. This is my daily life.
Yeah.
You know, it's challenging. I think it's sometimes really unexpected with trades, and I think sometimes there's more time to prepare.
Yeah.
A player might even want a trade to happen, and I think it's case by case. So I did have the experience of being traded once, but it was at the end of when our league was about to fold. So I never actually experienced going to the other team, but got the news that I had been traded. And so I think it's, you know, it's part of the business. It's definitely part of it. And, you know, you hear some horror stories about kind of the process of what happens. And so I think it's, you know, you try to handle each case and the communication and, you know, give as much prep as you can. Sometimes that's not the case, and that makes it a little bit more challenging.
Yeah. We had Bobby Wagner on, and even with his, you know, millions and millions and millions of the contract, he knew it was going to be okay. But after 10 years with his team, he just kind of found out when everybody else found out, essentially.
Yeah.
So that's tough. It's almost like layoffs, right? It's like it happens.
Right.
And I've certainly had to lay off people and been laid off. But but there's a way to do it, and there's a way not to do it. And, and hopefully you're not on the side where, you know, you're on the good side of history.
Right,
you
know, yeah.
And then what about, though, I know that, I haven't done a deep dive, so forgive me if it's a little ignorant sounding, but I have heard there was like this sweeping report that happened probably last year, right? And it was about the way people were treated, not at your place, but across the board. And there was this how did that affect you?
I think it affected me on a lot of levels. And you're talking about a report that came out about systematic abuse, really, and also not just systematic, but current abuse that we had coaches and staff members within the league on different teams, you know, having a variety of instances, events, and abuse. So I remember reading the article that was put out by The Athletic at the time, early in the morning, and I remember just crying, just sitting there and reading it and crying, because I know to an extent how it feels to be a player and around that environment, and then you just know that this is something that has been going on, and essentially players just putting up with things and struggling for so long to voice and to be heard and to be listened to. And I think the other part of it is then, okay, now I'm in a position to really help and change the narrative. And I think going to like, okay, what can I do now in this position, in a position now of, you know, an administrator, not as a player, what types of rules, what types of policies do we need to put into place? What resources do we need to start providing? And then also, I think, you know, seeing some of the things that we were already doing and being able to say, okay, good, we've actually already established some of these safeguards, mm-hmm. but what more can we do?
Because you all were, the league itself wasn't started last year, right?
Correct.
You all were
Correct.
New to it. Mm-hmm. So you, I guess, were given an opportunity, or the opportunity presented itself
yeah.
to be representative of something different.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I think that's how, that's always been our mindset, you know, how we can do things differently. And the league is now in its 11th season going into this year. So, you know, that's, which is the longest standing league. This is the third professional women's yeah. soccer league we've had in this country. Yeah. So I think a testament to, you know, the times and how this league is now continuing to grow. But absolutely. And having a little bit of the foresight, or I guess maybe the more the insight too, of what has happened in the past and how we can do things differently to support our players.
Yeah. And this season, you all, you've done all the trading, I think, maybe there's more, but you have this young woman, Alyssa. Tell me about her. Tell yeah. me why it was so exciting to get her mm-hmm. in that first draft.
Yeah, so she was the Alyssa Thompson, a local player, high schooler, to first high schooler to enter the draft and be drafted. So 18 years old and dynamic. Mm-hmm. I think she is mature on the field, you know, especially as a young player, mm-hmm. has competed with the full women's national team already, so has that international experience as well as youth national team experience. And I think what was important about that too is, you know, going into this first season, my first season, full season as general manager, and really trying to strategize both for the short and long term of our club and how we can elevate right now in the short term. Mm-hmm. So really trying to achieve our goals of success of being a championship winning organization as soon as we can, but balancing that with that long-term strategy of, you know, how we can bring in players that yeah. can develop and grow over time as well. And Alyssa, I think, is making an impact already, but also is part of that long-term thinking and strategy, and a balance to our roster too, with bringing in some veterans that mm-hmm. have the experience, but also bringing in some of that young energy as well.
So the impact she's making already is, the team itself, mm-hmm. they've gotten to play with her and ready for
yeah,
for the
preseason.
For kickoff
yeah.
or playoff or yeah. I don't know sports.
Regular season. Yeah.
Regular season stuff.
You're learning.
I am learning. I'm trying. I really am. And also just there's an enthusiasm mm-hmm. among the fans.
Yeah.
I was able to go to the fan party.
I had a fan
that
fest.
You all, yeah. Fan, yeah, that was when the draft happened, and oh man, such a great group of people mm. who just really care and I don't know what, I think it was a Friday afternoon, you
yeah.
know, found their way there,
yeah.
Which is very exciting. And so is the idea for you to, I mean, in your role, I want to get to the heart of your role, because to me, it seems like you're kind of at you're the boss, you're the lead, you're, you know, is it like, let's get this team, have the next few years, get this team winning the finals. What are the finals called?
Championship.
The championship.
Yeah.
Yeah, and do that more a few times if you can.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you see yourself in LA for the duration? I'm putting you on the spot on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
yeah.
see yourself here. That's
yeah.
great. And that's awesome. And I know that when you there was a time where I believe you and your wife. Am I getting that right? You and your wife were thinking about where to go and then to college you here. How
yeah.
important is it to you to represent LGBTQ plus people yeah. in this role?
Yeah. I feel like I wear a lot of hats, not just in my role, but in terms of who I represent.
Yeah.
Black, Cuban, female, LGBTQ, and it's largely important. It's so critical, I think, because one, we still don't have enough representation in these types of roles, especially, you know, leading sports teams and clubs. And again, when we go back to the visibility factor, mm. you know, I think, you know, being able to relate to someone that then helps you to think of yourself in that position or role, especially if that's something that you want to do, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I use you as an example too, in terms of, you know, thinking about investing and, you know, financial literacy and education, you know, the things that I have looked at and studied, typically they're white men. And,
sure.
and I don't necessarily, I can't really, well, you don't have the same types of either struggles or challenges or things that you would have to go through that I would by virtue of, you know, just how our society is. So I think to be able to represent, you know, whether it's women or Black people or LGBTQ people in this role and position, it's something that I will always continue to voice and, you know, hopefully model an example of what can be for, for someone.
And that's what I do in life, and it's also why I have this podcast in the visual form that we now have it in, because the more I understand, you know, and speak with people, and this is, I'm loving this, right? But it really is, I get that immediate feedback from people. I saw myself. I can see myself in that, you know? And it used to be that you would hear that like 20 years later.
Right.
Because somebody was quietly watching, and then they would tell the person, you know, if they got a chance to, or they'd say it. But now they can see it today.
Right.
They can see it streaming, and they, you know, it's right there. And so it's important, but it's also not your obligation to do so. So that's why I was curious a little bit about that.
I think, it's one of those things too, where as I became more comfortable with just in my own skin and being open and vulnerable, it just became easier and more natural. But I think that just helped me become more of myself, you know, and that's definitely liberating too.
What can you speak to, if anyone, because I did hear you say it, I didn't miss it, you said you did have imposter syndrome. What can you speak to and say to people who do themselves feel imposter syndrome, especially if they're underrepresented, underestimated? Is there anything that has helped you in those rooms?
I think, and I'll just even use like my real life example now, this is the first time that I've been a general manager. And I think leaning into that and saying, I'm not gonna be perfect, like that's impossible in anything, but just understanding and leaning into the fact that this is the first time I'm doing something, and I will use all of the different skills and tools that I've collected in a variety of different avenues, but that's okay. It's okay to know that that this is the first time, and I actually will say that with my staff. Like, clearly this is my first time being a general manager. So I think that's been a step one for me. And just knowing that it's a process. I think also I've started to use just the becoming, you know, word a lot for myself and what I do and what I'm trying to achieve and my goals. But, you know, I think that's been helpful, just kind of using some either language around it and just leaning into the discomfort a bit.
And speaking of becoming, Barack Obama had never been president when he became president,
you know,
becoming from being Michelle.
Exactly.
But he was never president before he became president, and then he was, you know, and he became our greatest president, in my opinion, the greatest president we've ever had. And I also, I mean, that's a wonderful way to put it. It's very realistic, you know. And I think, too, when you're in those rooms, and you kind of also look around and see, well, did that person ever do what they're doing? And that person ever do what they're doing? And and to know you have like people's backs and they have your back, and we're all trying to go towards the same destination, that has to feel pretty cool.
That's the fun part for me, at least. I mean, being able to do this, you know, with an incredible group of people, the staff, you know, the players, and, you know, especially with us being a first time club and organization in our infancy, you know, we get to set the culture. We get to build this club and what it stands for and what people will say about it 5, 10, 20 years from now. So that's the fun part.
That is, and I think in the spirit of being a little bit different, if there's someone watching or people watching who are not in a city that has a club, or not in this country, can they be like, can they be part of Angel City? Can they root for Angel City?
Yes, definitely. Absolutely.
Do they follow them online? How do they show their support to
Angel City? I mean, the website is one thing. I mean, we're obviously all over social as well. The games, you know, can be streamed and televised. And so following us, you know, just watching the games and becoming a fan, falling out love with this team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Wrexham fan, and I never step foot wherever Wrexham is.
I love it. I love it.
But that's kind of how I equate it a bit. And then last, I want to talk just about the gender inequality that Abby was speaking about. How is that going? Like, with all the investment and the sponsorship and this and that, and then the league itself, like, I guess you have caps and things like that you have to consider. But where do you think that stands today, and where is it going?
I think we will continuously increase the amount of the limits of the cap until my hope is that at some point we don't have a cap. And you know, we tested in our league for the first time. We had a free agency with criteria of players having to have played in the league a certain amount of years to have that free agency status. And that was the first time that some players then had the choice to actually negotiate of where they wanted to be. And I think that's really, for me at least, the bigger thing. Even with the money, it's that representation of choice, of, you know, the ability of a player to say where she wants to go, where she wants to play, versus having to go to a certain club and team. So it, I think, you know, it allows more freedom. But it's a process, and we're growing, and I think we also are seeing some of the restrictions and how that plays out with just attracting players, attracting other talent from other countries, the ability to bring other teams in that, other players in that are playing in leagues that don't necessarily have some of the same types of restrictions that we do. So,
and then you think about like Brittany Grenier and all that implication of how maybe salary played into that. Think about the WNBA trying to figure out their whole getting people, flying people around, and
the charters.
It seems a little bit petty, but it's about like their livelihood and getting enough sleep
and health
and health and not running through airports. And there's so much there that's still to come
for sure
that needs to be fixed. But I am optimistic about what I'm seeing. Just again, as like, you know, someone from the outside looking in and just seeing, it looks like things have changed even in the last 2 years. It looks like there's, because you know what it is, it's, we're talking about it,
right?
And
right.
it's just like the unfortunate report.
Yeah,
it's being spoken about. So what is that, sunlight and disinfectant? And when you're not Trump, you know what that really means.
Right,
but sunlight is the best disinfectant, they say, like putting that out in the real world and letting everybody see it. But I am stoked. I'm going to be at as many games as I possibly can.
I love it.
In LA. And when I get out there, I'm not just out there. I'm screaming. I'm
amazing.
Jumping up and down. Every time they, like, anytime they're on their feet, I'm on my feet, because I'm like, they have to do that.
Oh, we have to have you in the supporter section then.
Something.
There's no seats. You just stand and you chant and you cheer.
Something about the game just kind of does something to me. So I really love it. And I wish you the best always. And you have full support from this podcast, from me, of course. And we're going to keep an eye on things. And I wish, and I know that there's some competitors out there watching too, but this is, you know, LA territory.
Yes, we are. We are in LA territory. I love it. I appreciate all that.
So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Carolyn. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.